It is different with those who come from a spoiled life, they have to be treated very differently. So, dear brothers and sisters, I gave you a detailed report about these spiritual brothers and sisters and their ascent, that it is also difficult for them to settle into the spiritual world and to be obedient, and that only as much is demanded of each person who returns as one can demand of them. Not so much can be demanded of those who were so simple and modest in spirit. But the further one ascends, the greater one is obliged to spiritual merits and achievements, and one will be tested on all of that. And so one can progress and advance. This heavenly world, this new world, should also be a world of joy for those modest and poor people. For they have no demands, they are quickly satisfied and sometimes happier in spirit than someone who is several steps above them, but who experiences great disappointment on his return home and does not find his way around in the new world so quickly and delays his own ascent through his personal attitude, through his dissatisfaction, through his opinion that he has, but also through his vices, through his immodesty, through the demands that he makes, through his need for recognition that he has. For many come and believe that he is a respected spiritual being and that he deserves to be received by the high spirit world of God and that he will be granted a very special, glorious heaven. So disappointments are experienced by some and surprises by others. So, dear brothers and sisters, I have given you an insight into the life in the afterlife of those who have lived a modest existence on earth and who are on the ascent. So may you, dear brothers and sisters, be blessed, and may your thoughts and your will for good be blessed, so that you can work under the blessing of God. God bless you. Experience report from Spirit Teacher Joseph through his mediator Beatrice Brunner in the hall on Mar 1 Quartington Stress, Direct Template, Tape Recording. December 2, 1970. Paula, a sustainable belief in God is of great importance. How an unbelieving woman became aware after her death that life goes on. Control Spirit. God bless you. Dear brothers and sisters, a sister by the name of Paula is speaking to you. She speaks of her retreat and her ascent. May God's blessing penetrate you in this hour. May you be able to raise your hearts and souls and expand your knowledge. God bless you. Paula, I greet you with your greeting. God bless you. My name was Paula, I say, was Paula. I will tell you about my earthly life. I will only touch on it briefly, but will then explain my retreat into the spiritual world in more detail. As a human being, I could not believe in God. Of course, I could not believe in life after death or that there was a spiritual world. So I did not believe in spirits, ghosts. For me, there was no God. I always mocked and laughed at my fellow human beings when they spoke about God or religion. Based on my knowledge, I explained to them that there could not be a God at all. But I tried to be fair in life. I tried to live right and sometimes did something good for a poor person. I supported poor people, I loved justice and peace. So I did everything I could to lead a better and higher life. I was not poor in earthly goods. But I simply could not believe. Because so many terrible things had already happened in the world, and still happening, and that seemed to me to be an obstacle to believing in a God. Well, I don't want to dwell on that anymore. I would just like to mention the following. I had a painful sickbed for a few weeks before I was allowed to leave this world. When I was on my sickbed in the last hours of my earthly life, I could see things that seemed strange to me. I could still think clearly, and so I imagined that what I saw was fantasy or a dream. I was ill, I was in pain, I was getting injections, and so I could think that I was no longer in complete control of myself and that such images were appearing before me. I also heard people talking. I saw my deceased mother, and she seemed to be pleading for me. She always said, my child was good and tried to live a right life. The fact that my daughter couldn't believe can't be her fault alone. One should be a little lenient with her in this regard. That's how I always heard them talk. Now and then I saw what seemed to me to be strange figures. They were dressed very elegantly, but they were dressed in the way you often see in plays in the theater, where the actors are dressed in long, wide, flowing robes from an old time. So sometimes when I was looking, I thought to myself, am I actually in the theater? Am I watching a play? What is it? I didn't believe in life after death, and as I mentioned, I didn't believe that there are invisible beings that can make themselves visible to the dying. But the way they were dressed didn't seem to me like people you usually see walking around on the street and in houses. They had such long, wide, flowing robes, and they seemed quite elegant. I couldn't really understand them either. It seemed to me as if they were far away, as if I had to listen from a distance to what was being said. But then they were gone again and I no longer saw or heard them. I only saw my relatives who were around me. But I was too tired and too weak to speak. But this looking, this seeing came again and again. Again and again these beings were there, and again I heard my mother praying for me. And so the moment came when I could separate myself from the body. Then I clearly heard my mother's voice saying, now it has happened, the separation has taken place. I also saw my mother very clearly, but then I saw her disappear. I had the feeling as if I was being lifted out of my bed by a gust of wind and as if the wind was carrying me away. That's what I felt. But I suddenly felt light. I was no longer in pain. It was a pleasant feeling to be lifted and carried like that. But I didn't see anyone and didn't hear anyone speaking. The only thing I thought I heard was a very specific noise in a specific tone, and I assumed it was the wind that had the strength to carry me away. So I escaped, I fled from the house where I had lived. So they carried me out, and it happened so quickly. But then I felt myself sitting down. Suddenly it became a little dark around me, I could no longer see any light, it was twilight. Now I had the strength to get up, I was lying there in a forest. I got up and looked around. Then I was frightened, because I thought, at this time of day I am still in the forest. But now it is high time that I leave the forest and go home. I must say that when I was alive I loved the forest so much and spent a lot of time in the forest. That was how I thought humanly, I didn't even know that I had died. On the one hand it was like a dream for me, on the other hand I felt it was a great liberation and release. I felt that something had happened, but I couldn't explain it. I could think just as I had when I was alive, and because I was an unbeliever, it was difficult for me to change my mind, because I did not believe that there was life after death. I did not believe that there was a world invisible to mankind. I was full of disbelief, and so I thought in a human way, I am in the forest, and now it is time for me to go home. But everything seemed strange to me. I knew the paths I had taken exactly, yes, I even knew the trees, very specific bushes and the forest clearings. I knew everything, and now I ran away and looked for my familiar paths. But I could not find them, everything was strange. Now I thought about how long I had been here and whether I had somehow got lost. I could not really get my mind right, everything was strange to me. And so I just went on, I just kept running. I might have been standing in your human terms. And what I found strange, the twilight always remained. I was afraid of night, because then I could have lost the way completely. But it didn't become night. It was always the case that I could still see the way. The twilight, the atmosphere, was such that you could always have expected night. And so I became uncertain and began to be afraid. Then I called my husband's name, and I called the names of my children, who were probably already grown up but who came and went a lot. None of my relatives answered me. I could call as loudly as I wanted. And yet, the closer I listened, when I stood still and paid attention, I had the feeling that there were others near me. I heard a rustling, I heard talking. That then prompted me to call out even more, but no one answered me, it seemed as if they didn't hear me. With all the strength I had at my disposal, I called out the names. But nothing, absolutely nothing came near me. Then I had the idea that I could still call the dog. We had a dog who loved me and was always so attentive. His name was Nero. And so I called his name out loud as I could. It wasn't long before a dog came to me, Nero. But it wasn't the Nero who still lived with us, But the dog who had died years before, it was our old dog, who I had also loved very much and who was so devoted to me, he was also called Nero. When he became old, sick and blind, he had to be killed. We were extremely sad about this and it hurt me so much that to overcome our pain, we got a new dog as quickly as possible, and gave him the same name in memory of our Nero. And so I was quite astonished, the old Nero was there, who had long been dead to me. He jumped up at me and showed his joy at meeting me. He even licked my hands and didn't want to leave me. He showed his great joy at having found me, jumped away a little and came back to me, circling me and showing his joy. Then I thought, yes, this Nero is dead. That isn't the Nero who is alive now, that isn't the same dog. This one is the old Nero. I knew him well, and he knew me. Well, in my desperation I said to him, now listen, lead me out of this forest at last. Lead me home, you know the way, lead me away from here. And Nero seemed to understand that. He walked ahead of me and I followed him. We had to cover a long way before it started to get a little lighter and I had the feeling that we were soon reaching the end of the forest. So we came to the end of the forest. Nero walked further with me. There were now large fields in front of us. But they seemed a little desolate to me and completely foreign to me, it was an unknown country for me. But I felt a little safer now. Nero was with me and he was supposed to lead me. He kept going forward and I followed him. So we came to a pasture or an enclosure and I noticed that there were countless dogs in it. This enclosure was quite large. Nero was still standing next to me, but then he left me and went into the other dogs. Yes, on the one hand I was just amazed and on the other hand I asked myself, where am I actually? I couldn't remember ever having seen a kennel with so many animals. This wasn't a kennel in the usual sense, it was a large area, just surrounded by a hedge. Though these animals were together, and they were peaceful together, they were playing with each other and doing what dogs do. So I stood there and thought. A little way away from me I saw two beings, that's what I have to call them today, but at the time they were people to me, because they looked like people. They also seemed to enjoy these animals and admire them. So I spoke to them. But I was a little unsure, and my uncertainty was evident. These two, who were standing there admiring the animals, said to me, "It is wonderful to see and know that they are alive." "Yes, that they are alive," I repeated after them, and what they were saying together was actually strange to me. "It is a satisfaction and a joy to know that they are alive." I didn't know what else to say. "Yes, it is nice that they are alive, it is nice." And then they asked me, "Do you have anyone here that you know?" "Yes, of course, he fetched me from the forest," I said to them. "I had strayed from the path and so I called him and he fetched me and brought me here." "Ah," they said, somewhat surprised, "then you haven't been here long?" "No," I replied, "everything is strange to me. But perhaps you can tell me where I am. What is the name of this country, this village? What is it called? Where am I?" "I have no idea," I said this half desperately. The two of them could see how uncertain and uneasy I was. Then one of them said, "Don't you know that you've died?" "Died? Impossible," I answered. "I can't possibly have died, I'm still alive." Then they laughed. "Yes, your body died. You left it behind for the world. But you had an immortal soul in your body, the soul is immortal. The soul also has a body, a spiritual body, because you are in the spiritual world." "In the spiritual world? Strange. Do you live like a human being?" "Oh yes," they said, "you see, you can talk, you can think, reflect, call out, you can scream, cry, laugh. You see, that's it. The immortal soul carries so much power within itself and brings back everything that was present in human life. You have freed yourself from the earthly, perishable body that clothed the soul. But now you have your spiritual body and you are alive." Then I said, "But I am a complete stranger here, and I am surprised that there are not more such spiritual beings here." Then they said, "Oh yes, there are many here. You will probably meet them, perhaps not exactly where you are standing now, but if you go a little further, you will meet them. You will find a busy and varied life and activity here, similar to that of humans. Only here you are under a higher rule. Here it is not humans who command, here it is God and those who are on God's behalf and carry out His orders. They had spoken of God, and I thought about it and asked, "You are talking about God, is there a God here? Have you seen God?" "Oh no," they answered, "we have not seen God. We still have a long way to go to Him, but we are on the way to Him." And that is what will happen to you too. Before you come to God, you will meet many other spirits, also high and exalted, to whom you must obey, for they are the ones who then rule over you, lead you and decide over you. So I naturally wanted to know more, what happens to those who did not believe in God during their earthly life? They answered, "Yes, that is one of the worst things about not believing in God. Then it will be difficult to get close to Him. You will still have a long way to go," they said somewhat dismissively and acted as if they were no longer particularly interested in me. And so they said goodbye and said, "You just walk along this path here now and someone will take care of you from time to time." So they no longer felt the need to continue talking to me. What a pity, I thought. Now I have found someone who could have taken care of me. Because I did not dare to speak to each one of them straight away. On top of that, I was becoming more and more afraid. I started to think about it. I looked at all these animals for a while and thought about the sentence, "It is a joy to know that they are alive." Then I thought to myself, "Isn't it a joy to know that you yourself are still alive? If these animals are alive and so am I, then there is nothing that can be dead. Once it has been filled with life, then everything, lives on, in a world that is called the invisible world, which is only invisible to humans. So there is a world where God lives and where He rules." So I thought, then I have neglected a lot in my life. What can I do to look a little better? I looked at my appearance as best I could. I didn't feel as well dressed as I had when I was alive. I was no longer in pain, I felt light and comfortable, but I was wearing shoes that I had never worn in my life. Then I thought, where do these shoes come from? These shoes look like a beggar's. I should be ashamed to walk around here in shoes like these. It was only now that I noticed it. Up until then I had not had time to look at myself and think about what I looked like. I was too preoccupied with the question of where I was, because I still felt like I was in a dream. Now I was sure that everything I saw was real. I looked at the shoes properly. The sole was worn through and the upper leather had holes in it too, so these shoes did not look good at all. I did not like them, so I immediately tried to take them off. I thought, I would rather go barefoot than with shoes like that. But strangely enough, I could not take them off. It was as if they were sticking to my feet, I couldn't take them off. I sat down and spent a long time trying to get these shoes off, it just didn't work. A strange world, I thought, I'm alive, here with shoes that I've never seen or worn in my life, I should be ashamed. Then I looked at myself and what else I looked like. I was wearing a skirt made of the coarsest material there is, and the shape was probably impossible. I didn't know what my face looked like. I had no mirror, I couldn't see myself. But I saw that I wasn't doing very well. And I was actually surprised that the two who had spoken to me had paid any attention to me, because they were much better dressed than I was. But then I also thought, that's why they left so quickly, because they don't want anything to do with me, because I really didn't look particularly good. I thought, should I go on now? Now my true attitude is revealed, everyone can see who you have been in life. Now it was clear to me, it was not about the fine clothes you had in life that mattered. No. It was about something that I simply did not have, faith. But I had also done good things, I had not despised people, I tried to help them too, and I loved truth and justice, that was something that could speak for me, I thought. And I thought, perhaps I can still get rid of them, my shoes, perhaps it is true that one can buy something else here. But I was penniless, I had nothing, not even any companions, I was completely on my own. What should I do now? Should I retreat into the forest? Should I call my dog AA again and stay in the forest for a while? Perhaps someone would come and take pity on me. Should I go into the forest and try to ask the God I never knew in life to help and support me? Or should I stand by what I stood for in life? Should I admit everywhere that I lived without faith and laughed at people when they talked about God and faith and religion? What should I do? I thought about it. And so I thought to myself, there is nothing else. You have to stand by what you were. Only the truth can move you forward. So I will go as I am. I will no longer make an effort to take off my shoes. I cannot take off my clothes either. So I stand by it. I was a sinner. I was a poor person who came to eternity and who was blinded by the world and could not believe what was being proclaimed. So I have to stand by it. That was my thought. So I wandered off and met other spirit beings. Now it was clear to me. They were all spirits with me. Some were better dressed than I was, others didn't look much better, and so I felt I had nothing to be ashamed of. But sometimes I saw people who were well dressed, and I wondered if I should approach one of them. But I thought, not right away, I have to deal with myself first. When I came to this village, I also had the opportunity to withdraw a little. There was also a small garden. It didn't look particularly well kept or beautiful. There were bushes and flowers, but they seemed to be wilted, dead. But I could hide in this garden for a while. There were bushes, and I got down on my knees there and wanted to deal with myself, to talk to myself. That's how I imagine my past life, how it had been. I had done good things, but it seemed to me that this didn't count for much here, otherwise I wouldn't be in this state. I thought, I have caused people pain because I laughed at them, humiliated them, they had believed. How to envy them, those who could believe without seeing, who could simply believe, how to envy them? Well, what should I do? Can I now ask God to have mercy on me and forgive me for never having believed in Him? I wanted to try. They spoke of a merciful God, and this world must have someone who shows mercy, I thought. For if there is an eternal life, then there must also be a good God. There must be a God who is interested in eternity. There must be a God who takes pleasure in beauty and who takes pleasure in love, in mercy and in justice. If there is an immortal soul and a God, then this immortal soul must attain the bliss of the Godhead. That must be the case. So I will try it. And I began to ask and pray. Yes, at first I only did it with my thoughts. I could think like a human being. I silently asked God to forgive me. I asked Him to impose a punishment on me, and I would accept it, because I wanted to believe in Him too, and whatever the future might bring me, I would never be an unbeliever again. I promised myself that. So I began to pray, "You kind and merciful God, who exists, who lives, who works, who has mercy on the poor, have mercy on me too. Listen to me and send someone to me who will take me into His house, who lives with me, with whom I can live in peace. Make it possible for me to live in peace here. Give me a task, I will do anything." That's what I thought, and it was still so quiet around me. I was already satisfied that at least it wasn't dark. When I left the forest, it had become lighter and it remained bright. It did not become dark, it did not become night. But I had no one. I was abandoned. And it was clear to me, if you deny God in life and abandon Him, you are also abandoned by Him. You do not immediately find a loving welcome. That cannot be possible. But I will ask. I did this in my thoughts at first. But when it remained quiet around me, I began to call out. I wanted everyone to hear it. I did not want to carry any secrets with me. I called out everything I could and knew. What I had done unjustly and what friends and acquaintances I had offended. I asked them as a spirit, "Forgive me, forgive me. When you return to eternity, I will serve you. You may ask everything of me, I will do it, but God should forgive me for not being able to believe in Him." I did not know how long I knelt and cried and called out. I did not know, I did not know time. And so I prayed in my own way, confessing what I had done wrong. I was willing to do better and to submit to whatever came. But it seemed to me that I would be left alone forever. It seemed so. I was very angry about it. And I had the impression that I deserved to look the way I did. When I was so deeply contrite, salvation came. Someone touched my shoulders, very gently, and said to me, "Paula, get up and follow me." I stood up and asked, "May I give you the things so that you can leave me?" Because I was afraid that I would be left alone again, just as the other two had said goodbye. This being was ready to give me his hand. He took my hand and I held his tightly so that I would not be left alone again. The being seemed very distinguished. He was dressed so distinguished. I followed and I didn't know where to turn my thoughts. I asked myself, "Is that an angel? Who could it be? Has God heard me? Has he sent me someone? How is that possible?" And yet a joy came over me. It seemed as if this being could read my silent thoughts. It asked me, "Just be calm, be completely calm and full of confidence. The world you have entered is a world of justice. But it is also a world full of love and full of mercy." How good these words did me. I didn't look left or right, I didn't want to see where I was being led. I felt safe, led by this being. So we suddenly stood in front of a house and the being asked me to come in. The house seemed to be of simple construction, but there was a garden around it in which the flowers did not wilt. There were also bushes and trees. I saw birds, they flew around and sang. And I suddenly liked the world. On the way here, I had the feeling that the surroundings had become more and more worldly, and yet it was not the world, but it became more and more beautiful, and I felt more and more secure. We went into the house. Everything was simple, but very well kept. Everything was permeated by a strange light. I did not know where this light came from. It seemed to me that it was coming from the walls of the house, from the ceiling. There was simply light there. I thought to myself, in accordance with my still human way of thinking, that it was artificial lighting, and yet it could not be like that. And I thought, this world must be completely different. Impossible things are possible here. Inside the house it was so beautiful that one would not have expected it to be from outside. From the outside it was simple to look at, and it was simple inside too, but the light created a special atmosphere, a warmth, that helped me to feel relieved. There I was standing in a room with this being. It had a table, a large book on it, and there were chairs around the table. Then I saw them, these angels of God. And now it became clear to me, these are angels of God. And how I imagined myself in my worn, rough clothes and my shoes with holes in them. They could see who I was. They didn't need to spend a long time leafing through the book and searching. I wanted to tell them that. But I couldn't. Now I noticed that these beings who were there and had been waiting for me didn't seem to have such a stern face. They were serious. But I had the feeling that a certain kindness and sweetness radiated from them. But I was still desperate, uncertain about standing there in front of so many sublime and shining angels of God. I didn't know what else to do. I fell to my knees and started to cry. Then someone lifted me up and said, "You don't need to cry here. If only you had cried in your world about your unbelief. You don't need to cry here. Sit down. We want to talk to you." Yes, they wanted to talk to me. That frightened me. What do they have to ask me? What do they want to talk to me about? I thought. They can see who is standing in front of them. Then one of them spoke up and said, "Why couldn't you believe? Wasn't the world you lived in beautiful? Couldn't you believe that there was also a master who created the things you benefited from? Have you never considered that there must be a master for everything and that there must also be a master for the world as it was created, with everything that lives and thrives in it?" "Oh yes," I replied, "everything is clear to me. You see, there is a great sinner standing before you. I have realized what I did wrong. I will never be an unbeliever again." And one of them said, "You never want to be an unbeliever again?" I looked at him in astonishment, because I was really serious. I noticed that they looked at each other questioningly, as if they wanted to say, "She never wants to be an unbeliever again, Do you believe that? Or so it seems to me. But another said, she is full of goodwill.